We back. Episode 122. I was genuinely about to say that in French, and then I realized I don't know how to say it in French anymore. The numbers have eluded me. It's kind of crazy to realize, like, when you're losing the last pieces of a language that you spoke a lifetime ago. I don't know if it's depressing, or maybe it doesn't need to be positive or negative. Maybe it just needs to be, right? Maybe things just are. That's what my therapist keeps saying. Anyway, hey, it's me. Hello. We've returned bi-weekly. It'll be like that, I think, for a little bit. But what did we cover today? We covered a bunch of news. Demon Slayer Season 4, obviously. We load some of the news up front, by the way. I mean, you'll hear in a moment. Then we get into Kaiju number 8, My Hero Academia Season 7. Let's go! Mushoku Tensei Season 2, Shogun. I'm up to Episode 8. And then we cap off some comedy stuff. Everybody's in LA with John Mulaney and the roast of Tom Brady on Netflix. We are so happy to be back. This is a really fun episode, so enjoy. Stupid, fat, hobbled, ruins it. Oh, hey, man. Hey, Grant. Hey there.
Hey. How's it going, Schmeagle?
Fella. How you doing it?
I'm good.
My little chips.
Welcome to the Lord of the Rings podcast.
Actually, a lot of Lord of the Rings to talk about this week, funny enough.
I feel like the main...
I wonder if that was intentional.
Yeah, maybe it's just in my in the subconscious. I guess there is, a little bit of news?
Mr. Podcast Brain.
I got the podcast brain. What's the big, the first piece of, quote, breaking news was that, are they doing more movies?
They haven't said a trilogy. I believe they said a movie with Andy Serkis directing.
Oh, good for him, though.
Yeah. It's his baby, right? Like, it's kind of full circle for him in a lot of ways. It's kind of cool to see.
He's set to star as well, right?
I'm not sure about that. I know the only part of the article that I kind of basically soaked up was that he was directing, Peter Jackson's producing, heavily involved.
But, I've got it here. New live-action Lord of the Rings movie. Film be titled The Hunt for Gollum, starring Andy Serkis, set to direct.
Oh my god, there's a name? It's really called The Hunt for Gollum?
Yeah, currently slated for a 2026 release, which seems ambitious. We're like mid-24.
The Hunt for Gollum?
Yeah. Take that.
He must be in it then.
Yeah, imagine, he's like, no, you know what, I really want to give the new generation a chance. And Rings of Power just had a,
yeah,
they just had a trailer drop. I haven't seen it yet, have you?
No, I'm going in blind. But they did, it's August 29th, which is the week after House of Dragon ends, season 2 ends.
Oh, okay.
Which is smart.
So this time they are not going head-to-head, because they did go head-to-head, like, directly last year, right?
I think there was, a week of separation, if I remember.
Yeah, okay. And you know what? Just, while we're in this area, I think House of Dragon just dropped, a trailer. Another trailer or their first trailer, I can't remember.
I think they're the first one. I remember they dropped the first one right before the Succession series finale.
That was the big
stinger leading into the... that.
Okay.
But I saw that one, but I haven't watched this one.
That's something, I suppose.
Yeah. I'm excited. I'm really looking forward to that. We were talking about that the other night, and Leanna's like, oh yeah, shit. Like, that was good. And I'm like, oh, I forgot you did like that. She won't watch Game of Thrones, but she enjoyed House of the Dragon.
That's interesting. So. Okay, yeah, never mind. Did you both prefer House of the Dragon over Rings of Power? I think
I would say so, yeah. Rings of Power had a lot of faults for sure, but I remember that first episode being so strong, and I think back to that opening set piece of Rings of Power often, actually. It was really good.
I think on the whole,
fighting in the ice, in the ice.
Yeah, that was sick.
Frozen over, Citadel or whatever it was.
I do think, everything is different in retrospect and in hindsight, but I think there were definitely some holes, and it was tricky because it was being compared to House of Dragon. Sure. But I enjoyed that, and I will definitely watch season 2 of Rings of Power.
Oh, definitely. I remember there being some really grand set pieces, though. I remember, was it the raid on the village toward in the latter half of the season where they're all kind of, it's very Helm's Deep-esque, you know, like they're in not ideal circumstances and they're, you know, trying to defend themselves. And I remember really enjoying that siege or whatever, but
yeah,
don't have time to go back and rewatch it, but I think I might go back and watch like at least the pilot and the first episode and the last episode.
It's funny, man. Like
this comes out.
That was definitely the move for me back, like several years back, was when I was like really excited for something, I would rewatch, you know, the previous season or whatever. But now it just seems like the move for me has been just like YouTube recaps, which are of obviously like varying quality, right?
Yeah. You always get that one guy. He's really good. You know, like this like kind of series and like this kind of genre, and then, you know, everything else sucks, and you gotta find the other person for, you know, for this and that. Yeah, it's a bit of a juggle.
It's always funny watching what creators decide to include versus exclude when they do a recap. It's like, oh, okay, so this is what you believe or how you feel it should be presented and what viewers should keep in mind going in. But I digress. While we're on like in this kind of realm
news section,
huh?
Like, oh, sorry, go ahead.
All I was going to say is, just because we're talking TV news, I don't know if I was duped on this. Did you see whether or not Shogun was renewed for season 2?
There's a lot of, I think the article I read on Variety was talks are happening. I think they locked down Toranaga's actor down for, I think he contractually, like if there is a second season, it would be him.
Yeah.
But so I was reading. So the guy that wrote the Shogun book, he wrote 6 books all set across Asia, and only one other one is set in Japan, but it's like a couple hundred years later kind of thing. So people are kind of hemming and hawing of like, oh, maybe they're just going to keep that actor and kind of maybe like put him in place of like another, maybe in that line potentially or whatever. So I think it is true. Like,
I haven't finished it yet. I should note that.
Having finished Shogun, I don't know. I do kind of see. You know, we've talked about it before. Like, remember when we were talking about Cyberpunk Edgerunners, and we're like, hopefully this isn't like, you know, people are getting like the wrong sense of this. Like, you know, like they're not just, don't just go out and like repeat every anime, or you don't try and turn every video game into an anime. Like, I hope they, like, it's the same thing with Shogun. Like, it was kind of lightning in a bottle. I hope they don't just like, for the sake of like having more, you know, Japanese content like this, just like to have it, because Shogun did so well.
Yeah.
Like, there was clearly a lot of work went into this. So, I hope it's being continued for the right reasons or whatever, and with the right vision and image. But
I have 2 episodes.
Yeah, it sounds like it's happening.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Coming down to the wire.
Yeah, we're really, really enjoying it. Before we talk about Shogun, just because we're talking about TV, last piece of news. Did you see that The Bear is coming end of June, but they're dropping all the episodes at once?
I'm okay with that.
Different though, right?
Yeah, well, it's like, you know, everyone, it's not very foreign, right? Like, a lot of shows do that now. It's funny, you know, like, Amazon has been bad for, like, doing that, and they've kind of been moving away from it a little bit.
Yeah.
Or, sorry, Netflix. Netflix has been bad for it. They're kind of moving away from it. I don't know. I'm not sad to hear that, because it's a very bingeable show, and like, you know, I'm sure we would piecemeal them, because there is a lot of substance in each episode. Mm-hmm. Like, I did like the week to week with The Bear, but I feel like season 2, like there was a week, like it was on weekly in the States, and then when Disney Plus finally got it here in Canada, it did all come out at one time, did it not?
I remember. I think so. And then season 2 was week to week.
Maybe season 1 then.
But, I think season 1 was all at once because it was delayed, and then 2 was maybe week to week. I would love to see, and I'm positive that all these streaming services have this data, but I'd love to see, and I think just about all of them are publicly traded, so I'd be really curious to see like a case study on like how does it impact the total viewing hours of dropping week to week versus all at once. That's obviously probably hard to do, like an A to A apples to apples comparison, because you kind of, this is a great example with The Bear, right? Is like, what exactly happened for season 1 versus season 2 versus season 3? But then you have to like keep things like growth in mind and returning audience and all that crap. But
yeah, that is interesting. Are they like, you know, like do they want just like a set period, like do they want a whole weekend of view hours? Like are releasing in a time period where they need viewers, so they pull in everyone, so they watch it over the whole weekend kind of thing, and they have like a spike for a time they need a spike kind of thing?
Yeah.
Or is it like, you know, are they worried that it's not going to be watched week to week? You know, I doubt there's like a fall off situation, but
But it definitely, but yeah. There's definitely a reason they're doing it, right? Like, mm-hmm. You don't make these decisions willy-nilly, so it is kind of interesting.
No. But I guess one last piece of news. You see, today got greenlit. They're doing a live-action Spider-Man noir with Nick Cage.
I did see that. Yeah. So, like, I'm stoked for Nick Cage. Did you ever see that movie, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent?
I never did, no.
It's a fun flick. I think you would enjoy it. But it made me realize, I was like, you know what, man? Like, Nick Cage is, like, a lot of things, but, like, he provided some fun movies for me in my childhood, and it's kind of fun to see him. I think I'm a touch young for, like, the amount of callbacks and Nick Cage-related lore he put into that movie.
Sure.
But I did recognize, like, enough of it, and also he was starring opposite Pedro Pascal, who fucking crushed it, by the way, of course. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, the Spider-Man movies and stuff, I guess I'm stoked for Nick Cage. I'm not super excited at, like, yet another Spider-Man related property project, but
I think this is just weird enough.
Yeah.
And live action, where I think it can kind of be, you know, a little separate. I'm just hoping for, like, you know, like, I just want to see Sin City again. Do you remember that? Do you remember that back in the day? Remember how big a deal that was when that came out?
You know, I never saw that.
Oh, it's, I think, I rewatched it a couple years ago, and definitely on the rewatch, I was just kind of like, yeah, I was definitely 14 the first time I saw this.
Right.
You know, I was like, you know, it was like as probably the edgiest thing I had seen in a theater at the time. Like, it was just like, you know, all big and blown up. And, you know, it was just oozing cool and, like, style and, you know, whatever.
It was, like, black and white, right?
Yeah.
And, like, violent. Comic book,
very violent. It kind of had, like, a filter on it. The way it was shot felt very, very wet.
Was that, like rated R? Yeah, or no?
Oh, hard R, yeah.
Maybe I should spin that up.
Yeah, man. Fucking,
you think?
One of the creepiest Elijah Wood performances.
Oh, my God. Elijah Wood, isn't it?
Yeah, he is, dude.
Really?
Sin City's a fun watch, yeah. Like I said, it's very of the time. And, you know, like, I'm pretty sure it's a Frank Miller, based on a Frank Miller comic. And, it, you know, it's very, you know, down and dirty and edgy and kind of, you know, too cool for school. Like, you know, I've read some of the comic, but years later when I came back to it, I was like, yeah, just, this was just so, like, our period in high school. Like, it was a very nostalgic watch every time I see it. But
damn.
No, Sin City's fun. So anyway, what I'm getting at is, I think they could kind of do a Sin City-esque thing, live action, for this. And that's kind of what I'm hoping for, you know? But we might not get that. But it would be kind of cool to see, like, that technology brought back again.
Yeah.
For that noir look, so.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be. Okay, well, I guess we'll see. I'll probably end up watching a few frames of it, I'm sure, either way, right? Okay, well, let's jump into anime, because we had a pretty major premiere.
Huge week. Yeah.
The big one is Demon Slayer, right? Is this technically season 4?
Yes, sir.
Okay, yeah. So, or the Hashira arc. I just filmed a little TikTok/reel at Part-Time Otaku Podcast on our TikTok and Instagram account that I'm going to put out later this week with my thoughts. But I think, overall, I enjoyed that premiere. What did you think?
Dude, that was an awesome premiere. Like, it was funny because we were talking, you know, 2 weeks ago about just kind of, you know, how underwhelmed we kind of were with season 3. Not that it was bad. It was just,
when
we look back on it, there was, it was a step down, and there's a lot of stuff we did like. There's just, like, a lot of kind of, not even glaring things, just kind of like, oh, like, it's, you know, I guess a step down is the right way to put it. But that opening set piece, this premiere was, you know, I remember you had went to go see the premiere season 3 because, you know, we were all supposed to go. I think we were sick or what happened. We missed it. But you and Sam saw the premiere and you were kind of like, oh, there's just like an episode of Demon Slayer. It was like nothing crazy or whatever.
Yeah.
And this was the one to see in theater. Like, can you imagine?
That would have been great.
You get this whole, you know, 12 minute, you know, whatever scene, or I think it was almost close to 12 minutes. It was quite a big set piece before the title card drops. And I loved it. It was great.
Kind of give you everything.
Kind of got
you
the
want.
Gang back. Yeah.
You got the choreography, the animation, the fight scenes, the, like, big booming soundtracks, two, like, Hashira you've never seen in action before. That is something, like, I mean, anime is good at this, but Demon Slayer in particular, right, is, like, you're always wondering, and they've done a good job kind of breadcrumbing the audience of, like, you know, the Hashira are these like mysterious, powerful, really exciting characters that you don't see in action until you do. And then when you do, they like they deliver voice crack.
It's whenever they show off their like, it's always like a performance. Like it's a like a grand entrance. Like we've seen them, we get to know them, but when it becomes time to show the power, it's never like light. You know, it's always like big and booming. Yeah. Even like Mitsuri and the Miss Hashira there too. Like when they kind of, you know, in season three, like when the juice came on, like it was just like, whoa, like her entrance too, when she kind of saves Tanjiro right at the last minute. When she finally arrives at the village, I was thinking, I actually saw a clip of that today. I was like, God damn, like season three did have really good moments, you know?
I agree.
I loved it.
They had a lot of great moments. I think it just like dragged a little bit. And I think a lot of it was, we won't rehash it, but a lot of it was pacing related, right? Pacing and how they handled some of the upper moons at that point in the story. But that was probably the highlight for me, is that opening sequence. That was fucking awesome.
It was having Inosuke back.
Boys are back, and they better stay back.
The boys are back. Leanne and I, it's funny, I've actually had a pretty good laughing week for anime. You know, we'll talk about Kaiju number 8 earlier, but I was in stitches catching up on those episodes this week. The moment when Inosuke busts through the window.
I know.
It is like, it's like his laugh. It's like, again, we've said this 100 times. Like, it's never not funny. Like, it always gets a laugh out of me.
Yeah.
And just, you know, like, oh, I wonder where Inosuke is. And like, you know, like, cue, like the fucking Kool-Aid man comes blasting through the window. And then they can immediately take the time to be like, look at all this glass. Like, you're in so much trouble. And like, it felt more, this is going to sound weird, but the episode felt a little more meticulous than we've been kind of used to. Because like the last season was, again, there was pacing issues. And it all kind of felt like, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da. Like, it felt very on the train track.
Yeah.
And it felt this episode, it was, like, setting up, like, it was a lot of setting up little things continuously. It was all over the map. It was cohesive, and it made sense. But it just felt like a more fleshed out part of the show that we were used to, you know, like in season two and one especially.
Well, they covered a lot of ground in this episode.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Let's go through a couple. It all flowed. Yeah, let's go through a couple of the highlights. So, number one is we get more data than we've ever really had, more insight than we've had on Tanjiro's mark on his forehead, right? Yeah. They've kind of drip-fed the audience. Like, we know that maybe his dad / ancestors have had this mark, and that, like, he had a scar there, but then he twacked it in season one, and it became that weird mark. And then it, like, really heats up when he goes Super Saiyan, and I think that happened for the first time in the Entertainment District arc.
Yep.
And then maybe again in season three. But then in season three, Mitsuri and Tokido both got it in different spots on their bodies. And then so they, what's the lore drop? They basically say, okay, this was like
hidden. Once it happens, it slowly starts like spreading in a way. Like, it's not like a disease or anything like that, but it's like almost like the banner has been drawn, you know, like the charge has been done.
But you need like one guy to trigger it. Almost like an
inspiration thing. Yes.
And Tanjiro seems to be that person.
Yeah.
But
also the master is like, no one will ever see him again. Like, he's on his deathbed.
Deathbed status.
Or death knell.
Yeah.
Which was a very, you know, it's, in the moment I was just kind of like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, like they don't really need to get into it because like, we have been seeing his state. We know he's getting worse. We don't really know why or this and that. But it was just kind of like, as in a matter of fact thing, just kind of like, shit, like, I buy it. It didn't feel like there's like an ulterior or anything like that. Not like a good or a bad thing. It's not like they're setting up like a rug pulling or anything. Like, it just felt like, oh shit, like, yeah, like it's happening. Like, he's at that point now.
Yeah, but it it's dire. Tokido like covers pretty thoroughly the conditions for how he got his mark to appear, which was handy. Raising body temperature, raising heart rate. Yeah, that was pretty funny.
2 degrees. Very anime.
I know. There is one note. They definitely, like, obviously this was intentional, but they do cut away when Amane is revealing something to the Hashira.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And, like, it is an ominous cut that leads me, or the audience, I think, they're like, it kind of leads me to believe, like, okay, is there, like, a price to be paid here for the mark? Or is there a if or a but or something? I guess we'll see.
Yeah.
In any case, most of the Hashira seem to be dedicated to triggering it anyway. Mm-hmm. So there's that. Oh, man, there's also this other thing though that I wanted to mention. Did your heart stop when the two Hashira at the beginning, chasing that demon, fell into the Infinity Castle?
Oh, yeah. We that was excellent. Excellent choreography. Like, just like the flash, you're just like, oh, shit. And, you know, but...
You go from, kill this motherfucker, to, oh, shit, get out of there!
Unreal.
That was good. And they, like, you know, we talk about Demon Slayer's animation. Everybody does. And some people, you know, it's like peak and all this stuff. But, like, every time they've ever done anything in the Infinity Castle or Corridor or whatever the name of that Muzan's, like, lair is.
Infinity Castle. Yeah, yeah.
Is unbelievable. Like, do you remember the Akaza entrance sequence in season 3?
Sorry. Like when they're setting up the meeting in season 3?
Yeah, at the beginning of season 3, it's Akaza returning there for the meeting of all the Upper Moons.
Yeah, okay.
And there's this unreal sequence of him, like, on a platform that's bringing him down. And it looks like a title sequence kind of scene. It's fucking unreal. My point is basically...
I can't picture that. I might have to go back to that.
Oh, okay. Just watch the first 5 minutes, I think, of the premiere. It's outstanding. Okay. It's, like, really, really, really gorgeous. But, yeah, they that made it through here as well. Is there anything else? Boys are back.
Boys are back. We kind of got a very long segment with Zenitsu.
It was Deese.
You know. It's I really liked... Also, another thing that makes me laugh is, like, the handsome swordsmith guy and the bit trying to kill Tanjiro.
Yep.
Also, like, just, like, the... there was points in the episode where Tanjiro is like in bed, essentially, like, you know, they're doing like a different approach to a recap where like the backpack guy is like going through like the events and the, you know, and what happened this, like, explain that. And it felt very like forced and kind of like we're pushing the cart along. But again, like I understand why they need to kind of get some of these details out, but yeah, just that in Tanjiro's bit of like, oh yeah, that's actually pretty mild. I got it pretty easy with getting the sword this time. Oh. We got Rengoku's sword handle on.
Yeah. I was about to say that. That's tight.
That was pretty sick. Very fitting.
And it's on like this like flame themed sword, which is also dope. I'm assuming this will be his last sword.
I'm thinking so.
It's the lore sword.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the lore sword. Because they got it from inside the robot, right?
Like, yes.
The,
because there was a whole robot plot for some reason. There was a whole... with a hidden sword. I'm not going to poke at that one too much.
Yeah, I'm really. It might burst. That was definitely one of the weaker parts. The coincidence of...
Yeah.
The only thing I'll give it credence is, like, of course, in the Swordsmith Village arc, there's a robot with, like, a hidden sword from, like, an ancient era, like, a previous Demon Slayer.
You're right. I'll give you that.
So it's, like, I can wrap my head around that. I did, like, the whole bit about how, like, they can, it's, you know, there's, it's built in that, like, at any time they can relocate the Swordsmith Village. You know, there's multiple villages everywhere they can kind of in secret move to, like, when, for this instance.
Yeah. I agree.
I think the huge, huge highlight for me in the episode, and this is more like a voice actor kind of surprise. So at the end of the episode where the doctor demon, the good character,
Lady Tamayo.
Lady Tamayo and the crow shows up and kind of like essentially like, and she's like very apprehensive. So anyways, one of the major main villains of Bleach, Aizen, that's like the same voice actor. And like the second I heard that crow open his mouth, I was that's my boy. You know, Aizen's a bad dude, but like it's such an incredible vocal performance.
That was that's so funny that you call that out. Cause I was going to ask you like, do you know who that is? Cause that was like, they made it clearly. There was like, this is an important scene. Let's get like a special crow. The crow was wearing a little scarf. You know, I was like, okay.
I think that's the master's like crow.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's his like his assigned one. But yeah, so that was like a really fun Easter egg. Like again, you know, I picked it up immediately because I know the voice, but I don't hear him a lot and stuff. So that was kind of cool. But that was very good. Like kind of like the. It was just weird, like, maybe there is something with the master, because, like, it's not like the crow's playing mind games, but she is so apprehensive.
Well, she's a demon going there, right?
But I always thought the understanding was, like, there was a relationship between her and, like, the Demon Slayer Corps.
Well,
you know, so, like, this kind of felt like, oh, like, this is a big deal. And also, she's like, how did you find me? And he's like, I'll tell you exactly how I found you. And, like, he breaks it down. And I was like, you're paying for this guy to come in and do this performance. Like, you're going to get every friggin', you know, syllable out of him. But
I figured.
You know, I don't know. It was
back in the day, my interpretation was, like, that fuck, what's the master's name? Yubishaki? Fuck, it's something. No, so, yeah. I don't know what it is, but that might be it. But I figured that they knew each other, or at least of each other. But I didn't think there was like a formal relationship between her and the core. But maybe now that we're like in the end game now,
it's time to bring everyone together.
Yeah, especially if he doesn't have a lot of time.
Yeah, I do like that they held, like, it's in a very important, almost, you know, historic moment that she is being invited to, like, Wisteria Castle or whatnot. So that's cool. We get some weird stuff with Giyu.
That's the only thing I think that we didn't mention.
Also, the other thing, too, it's funny because I was curious as to, like, what exactly the Hashira training arc meant. Mm-hmm. And I now know, and maybe we still have time for it, like, in the next episode or the one after, kind of detail that. I had presumed that it was going to be, like, Tanjiro is now going to be trained to be a Hashira.
Same.
No, it's the Hashiras essentially running a boot camp.
Yeah.
You know, which, after hearing that, I was like, oh, that makes way more sense. Like, they're trying to get, as a whole, the Demon Slayer core.
Yeah.
Stronger, and I thought that was definitely an angle I never saw coming, and I enjoyed it. I thought it was interesting.
I think there's still time for them to pivot to our earlier guess and for them to make it a training Hashira or training Tanjiro to be a Hashira arc.
Yeah,
I think the biggest question I have in general, and I'm trying really hard to avoid spoilers, but is just like, yeah, like, because I think this is loosely confirmed to be 11 episodes, but it could be less. But every time
I heard it's 8.
Yeah, see, that's episodes. The thing. I hear between 8 and 11, and then even on the short side, I just see people in the comments being like, 8's way too long for this arc. Like, they're either stretching the shit out of it, or, and this is what I put in the thing I recorded today, or, like, maybe we'll get, like, half of the beginning of the final arc or something. Because I think it's, like, this, and then the final arc.
And then what? Yeah.
And then
yeah.
I think you and I have talked about it before on the pod. Like, then what? Like, do they just do another season or two of the final arc, or do they do movie or movies?
Well, yeah. So, okay, if that's the thing. So, like, if it is too big to be doing just this arc, then it could easily be, like you mentioned, like, dipping into a good tease of what is to come for the final, and then doing, like, a 2-hour blowout extravaganza, like the final movie, right? You know, get everyone's asses in theaters. I think, like, I kind of hope that is what it is, because that would be a awesome send-off for the series.
Man, what did Mugen Train make? Didn't Mugen Train make, like, neat, like, $800 million dollars or some bullshit?
I still believe it's in, like, the top 10, like, all-time Japan sales.
This is one of those weird scenarios where it's, like, as an anime fan, it's like, yeah, dude, like, go get your paycheck. Like, get a movie. Like, why would you not? I remember
everyone's got lifetime passes on this show. Like, everyone that watches this show loves this show. Like, there is the hate watchers too, but, like, you know, they've proved that, like, they've earned, you know, the seat, you know, the asses in seats there. So I think they should go with the bang. They really should.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. I'm so happy that this is back on Sundays and that we're covering it again.
It actually felt strange. It was like, it feels like season 3 was last year, which it might have been actually, or was it 2 years ago?
No, it was last year.
It was last year. Okay, that's a pretty quick turnover.
It's also just, we keep talking about it, but the rate of our aging. Like, I just remember, like, I remember the wait for these seasons feeling, like, infinite. And now it's like, you know.
We have other stuff in between.
Yeah, it's watch. Like, if you tell me at the end of this, hey, it's an 18-month wait till the movie or whatever they do, I'll be like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, time is just accelerating. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk about Kaiju number 8 next, because you already mentioned it, and you said you were cackling through it, and
I really enjoyed it. Yeah,
just to jump off that, like, I don't think, I mean, I know you recommended this one to me, and it was a great recommendation, and I'll never miss an episode, but, like, just based off the pilot, I didn't think I was getting into, like, maybe the funniest show that I'd be watching week to week, but it is legit fucking hilarious.
It's so good. Yeah, it's so funny. I think they do an incredible job as Kafka, as, like, they're playing up the whole old man thing. He's, like, literally our age. I'm, like, trying not to, like, pay too much attention to that. But, like, you know, they really play up. It reminds me of Naruto a lot. Just, like, the way where Naruto is such a punching bag. But he is, like, a serious character. Like, he, you know, he has his power and this and that. But, like, everyone around him goofs on him a lot. But, like, he knows, like, it's a joke and this and that. Like, it's a lot of the time, like, 80% of the time, it's, like, well, good-mannered and, you know, in good fun or whatever. And I am getting that vibe as well with Kafka in this. Like, you know, like the silly, like over top silliness when he's in the kaiju form is like very,
I know,
very over the top. And then like everyone's kind of beaten on it. Like the tsundere character, I'm blanking on her name, the blonde Shinomiya. Girl. Like the back and forth between the two. And like just so tsundere. Like the second he, like that really big scene where he comes into the room where it's revealed where he's not an officer, he's a cadet. And like, you know, yeah, she was goofing on him. Like, and then the second he comes in the room, like, you know, her cheeks rose up. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, you know, of course, like there's going to be this back and forth between them. And I'm officially now at the point where, like, the last thing that I read in the manga was, like, the reveal of that mushroom-looking kaiju.
I keep forgetting you read the manga. Okay, so, but you're caught up.
No, I haven't. I've literally read 7 chapters. Like, yeah, the first volume is 7 chapters. And that moment, that's where the manga kind of ended, is just, like, that other kaiju similar to Kafka shows up. And you're just like, oh, shit. Like, there's others.
Okay.
So everything past that point was new to me. And I really enjoyed it. I don't know, like, the fucking... I'll let you get in, but I don't know. I'm really enjoying Kaiju number 8. It's scratching an itch that I didn't realize that I really needed right now. For a show,
it's such a breath of fresh air. I love the reveal of the weird other talking kaiju mm-hmm. in disguise. I love the way they animate Kafka talking while he's in kaiju form. Like his mouth just mm-hmm. stays open and noise just comes out. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But like that's a choice, right?
100%.
Like because they animate everybody else talking normally at all times, then they just change like how like physical animation works in that when he's like kind of transformed. I don't know. I don't have a ton more to say. I like that we're getting more and more cast members or like team members. In the group. The relationship between all these people is like starting to form. When they do action, it's like really good.
It's on, yeah.
It's a when great example.
When he blows like from knees up of the kaiju, like when he kind of powers up, he saves Shinomiya. And just like the detail of the viscera left over, I was like, whoa, dude. Like,
no.
You know, production IG there. Like they've, you know, they do this kind of thing all the time. Like they're just, because the show looks okay. Very good background art. The characters, like, that is also, like, the character design, like, in the source material. So, like, they are staying true to that. But, like, it is a very simple-looking show. But I think they can kind of work with that. And then everything outside of those moments, they can really blow. Like, when, you know, the charging up of, like, his arm and, like, I was like, holy fuck. Like,
right? You know, when they go like, for it, they go for
finale
it.
Finale stuff. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, the scene, too, like, when he speaks up. In the, you know, he accidentally, you know, like, Mina, I'm going to be beside you, and, like, in front of everybody, and, like, he immediately gets punished for it. I also, I found it a cool reveal that, like, the vice captain is like, oh, he wants him around because he's funny.
Oh, right.
And then there is that very legitimate shift of, like, he suspects something is wrong. Although, he is a very serious person.
Yeah.
And he has, like, true intentions, and he's kind of playing up, like, this, he's playing up how silly he is, but, like, you know, he clearly is, like, a little more serious and tact.
He's got his eye on.
Yeah, and I thought that was just very kind of like, oh, shit. And then, like, there's the whole thing where he's studying, and you can tell he's, like, giving him the up and down, and, you know, and then a great way to end that kind of setup, like,
agreed.
You know, we're on your way to your first mission. But, yeah, no, Kaiju number 8 is fucking awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. I think when this season is done, I'm reading, for sure.
Yeah, you would, dork.
Yeah, dude.
I'm a dork. Tell me you watched My Hero Academia.
Yeah, man.
Let's go.
Of course. Yeah.
Because we've been lifelong fans of this show. We've never had a single negative thing to say about this show. For all the haters out there, dude. I'm trying to shit on this show. They've been delivering nothing but quality for 7 straight seasons, and I won't hear a word against it.
I asked Leanne, I was like, you going to be watching this? She goes, I'll be watching over the shoulder. I'm like, oh, fair enough.
You old Roy McKinnitsby.
But speaking of which, probably 2 of the best episodes the show's had in a couple years.
Years, for sure. Absolutely years, loved the premiere. Loved the follow-up to the premiere. Loved the twist with the Star and Stripe thing, dude. I love...
Unreal.
This... Not a lot of shows get a lot of credit for this kind of thing, so I think we really got to pay them their due here. I love that they introduced Star and Stripe at the end of season 6. I was like, you know, I didn't really care at the time. I was like, okay, well, this will be an interesting new...
Something.
...character and dynamic to look forward to. In season 7, like whenever that comes out. I'm not counting the days, but, you know, I'm looking forward to it. And to make the choice, spoiler warning for, you know, the first 2 episodes of season 7 of My Hero Academia, but to make the choice to come back after that long break and just ice that bitch after 2 episodes.
But she got it. They did, and, you know, in such a short and we've been critical of this too, but in such a short amount of time, I feel like I really got to know that character.
Oh my God.
And how
so
she thought and her kind of role in the world. Like, it just, the world building they did in such a short amount of time, I guess technically you want to call it like two episodes and an eighth, you know, with that, the ending of season six. Like, we literally got like a tease of her, like, you know, going head to head with Shigaraki, like kind of like looking at each other kind of thing.
45 minutes total, if that.
If that. And like, but again, the whole, and of course, like just the idea that an American quirk would be like, you know, just like as OP as that. It felt very like, you know, U.S. military.
Fuck yeah.
Which I found so funny. And like the theming of it was just very, so on brand, so genius, genuinely genius. And just kind of her, like, you know, she gets iced and you're just kind of like, oh, but like she does get that true last hit in. And that visually is the best the show has ever looked. Shigaraki from the when she is inside and you see like kind of like his mind palace of like him and All For One, and she is just running amok inside them, was
plus
like,
one because he said muck.
That is
sorry,
that is chef's kiss stuff. It was so good, dude. I couldn't believe it. I could not believe what was going on the screen. I was like, this show is like dialed out of 10 right now, and they do not go that high very often anymore.
It was
a really good feeling.
I totally agree. We've said this before, but like My Hero, like, for its faults or whatever, one of its biggest strengths is its ability to introduce new characters and get you feeling like you know them and like they've been around forever when they haven't been. And then like they can like kind of, you know, switch in characters willy-nilly whenever they want. They didn't do that obviously in this case, but you got to know the character really quick. Like they definitely did her justice, had a lasting impact on the villain.
Yeah, exactly.
And like you said, she nerfed that song bitch on the way out. Right?
Yeah.
She,
you're gonna kill me, I'm gonna fucking kill you.
Yeah, dude. She made him a little bit less complete. Maybe a little bit more beatable, but we'll see. That was, really fun. Their fight was fun. Shigaraki's becoming, like, my favorite on-screen character. Because of, like, how fucked up his circumstances are. Like, it's, like, quite complex, and it's a little convoluted. Like, it's not perfect. But he's, like, fun to watch. Like, fall to pieces, and be like one of two minds, but it's not, you're not quite sure whose mind he's acting on accord of.
Him trying to piece together if he's still him, or, you know, if it's All For One that's still like kind of like, you know, because I think they had said he's at 97% like, you know, in full singularity or whatever.
But I will tell you, if they don't resolve that plot point by end of season, I'm gonna be pissed, because like last season really felt like the end game, and I know the manga's not over yet.
Almost wondering if they just like they do like more. It's funny because like My Hero Academia feels a lot more Western, even though it is like very, very Japanese in so many ways. It feels it's more in line with you know Western comics intentionally. Like I don't think that's like a reach, but I'm almost wondering if like maybe they are gonna like wrap this up. Like the big arc is like done. You know, where they would do that in like a DC comic where
it
goes on and on and on for years and years and years, and then it's over, and like it's not like little arcs in between, it's just one giant arc, and I guess we can kind of count that as this maybe, and then maybe there is just like a new villain, or you know, maybe like, you know, I have a suspicion maybe Gabi or something like that. They kind of like teed up the original League of Villains
and
their important roles, and I'm almost wondering if like one of them is just kind of going to be like the new big bad, or they're kind of doing a lot of stuff with Spinner right now, who is kind of always like the background.
Yeah.
And you know what the crazy thing is too, like, you know, we're so high on you know these episodes right now, but like the second it gets back to the dorms and we're back with, you know, Midoriya and all that, I'm just kind of like, ugh, like fuck, like
I know.
I honestly wish this show was like a clip show of just big moments, and it was just like, oh, like, you know, like a voiceover of like the in-between stuff. Like I know it's not fair to say, I just kind of want the juice with this show.
They need a My Hero Academia Kai version to come out.
Or they need an editor, dude. That's like, you know what I mean? Like,
it's, have you guys considered, it's funny, right? Because like you kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't, right? Because in for this show, it'd be like, hey, just so you know, you don't have to put every single line of dialogue in the show. Like you can trim it down. You can trim the fat. Yeah. And in this case, there's like 35% fat, right? But who knows how much that would change the final product? And then you'd get manga fans furious. Like, what are you doing, eviscerating our show? So I don't know. It's like
Feels like, yeah, it's like you said, there's no middle ground.
Yeah, or, but like
the, this is the middle ground, yeah.
But like what I, to my point earlier, I just want the Shigaraki All For One identity crisis to be like resolved by season's end. I want to have like a clear picture of like who's the villain. I don't want like this like halfway we're fighting for a host body, because right now All For One exists in both places, which is just weird and is at times confusing. So I want them to like clean that up a little bit. But we're two episodes in and
21 episode. They announced it's going to be 21 episodes.
Okay, so it's 21 straight run. Yeah.
I believe so.
Okay, that's dope. I like that. Yeah. So that's exciting.
Right through the summer.
All right, let's move on. Did you get all my panic messages about Mushoku Tensei?
I had watched them yesterday, but I saw them like last minute. I was like, no, we're good. Yeah.
Okay, so I jumped the gun because season 2, episode 18 is called Turning Point 3.
Which is historically, that's like a big deal.
They've had two turning points. And they're both like gangbuster episodes and are kind of like the reason you watch the show, to be honest. Like they usually shake things up to such a large degree that it's like, oh fuck, now I got to keep watching. So I guess like in keeping with that, I'm definitely watching the rest of the season now that they did this.
Sure. Of
course. It just wasn't like grab you by the collar and give your head a shake the way the last two were.
Because I was behind two episodes, and so I watched the first one, and then, you know, it goes to the next, and I see Turning Point. I got excited, because, again, I'll be honest, I fucking hated the last week's episode, the week prior. Maybe it's just, like, off the, again, I just watched it was very twitchy on the couch, just like, I cannot believe they're gonna yada yada this.
Yeah.
And the whole, I have not been like genuinely like kind of like upset at an episode of anime in a while. Just kind of like it felt so forced and like just like we have to move it. And all I can think of is like maybe if you just didn't fucking drag ass for episodes now, we wouldn't have this problem to like get to where we need to be. I don't know. It's I was super annoyed with the.
No, I don't blame you. I mean, we were just talking about trimming the fat. I don't know, man. Like, there is a certain point where, for me, when I have so much negative to say about, like, a lot of the show's choices and pacing and whatnot, where, like, I think I eventually come to a place that's like, okay, if I dislike such a large proportion of what I'm seeing, then, like, maybe it's not for me sometimes. And then other times, when it's on, I'm like, no, like, this is fucking awesome. Like, I don't know. Like, there is, hear me out, and I'm not gonna, this is uncharacteristic of me to go half glass full. I'm not retconning everything I've said. But I will say, one thing that, like, is very much in Mushoku's favor by the end of episode 18, you know, because we see the man god again. Sylphie's pregnant, and now Rudy has to make this choice, right? Do I go help my family, knowing I have one here to raise, and I have this like ominous warning from some like, you know, ominous deity telling me to not go. But it does feel like he has a lot to lose now, and that he has grown substantially in this painfully slow arc. So like, you know, now maybe it's like sweeter that he has to leave, and like it's really gonna sting when things go badly. So and like that'll be, you know, good television and like good storytelling. So like maybe like, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, okay, see, the 16 episodes of boredom were worth it so that you could get like this really sweet payoff. And like, maybe we'll feel that way, but I do feel like it was a long, long journey to get here. Like,
I will say like the Turning Point episode was not my issue. I did like that episode. The only like side point is like he was obviously going to go, you know, like there's all this like kind of inner turmoil of like what are we gonna do and it's like we all know what he's going to do, like, so you're just kind of like yeah like that is what it is. My issue was the previous episode with where the whole Norn thing of like, we again, there's parts of it that made sense because they have set up that she does not like him and they kind of breadcrumb that a little bit. But the whole thing about him, like, storming into the class and, like, making a scene.
That was stupid.
It was so stupid. And then, you know, he goes to the point where, you know, he, like, he clues in that he's the problem. And, like, obviously you were. And then the scene where the scene where like he goes to her room and like we get all the introspection on like how his previous life, and that I thought that stuff was very elegantly done and awesome.
Agreed.
And but then like I understand like we have to move along, but like, and I understand Norrin is like, again, she is a child, like that is the character, but like it felt very flick of the switch, the problem is solved and become best friends, and then now he's just it just all felt so incredibly inconvenient, more so than like what you get in like in the genre and kind of like in storytelling as a whole. I felt it to be like I'm not a stupid viewer, and it felt like, you know, I don't know, it upset me for a very weird reason. I don't know why it triggered me as much, but like I said, I just found it very like, okay, so she hated him for all this big stuff and then just like fucking, you know, flick of a switch, we're all good, and like,
yeah,
you know,
no, I don't blame that.
It was a little patronizing.
The sister relationship arc, like many decisions in the book, or in the book, in the show, is peculiar, right?
Yeah.
Like clearly all these things form a puzzle. Like they all, like the pieces fit, like I get it. Like Rudeus is very much trying to right the wrongs in this life that he experienced in his past life. And like sometimes those parallels are direct and like sometimes they're not, but I think most of my issues with the show are pacing related, right? It's like, how mm-hmm. are we spending the time with the character? And like,
yeah,
does that resonate? And like, it obviously does for a lot of people, so I'm not gonna like shit all over it, but like, yeah, you know, it I guess it's just challenging sometimes when you've seen the show be so good, and then sometimes it feels like they're wasting your time, or like that they're spending their time on like kind of subpar storytelling when you see yeah. them do like good shit. That's why I like the stupid, just like overt sexual tones that go nowhere that are legit silly.
Sure.
Like just irritate me so much. It's like, cause you're better than this. And you know what I mean? It's like, why spend mm-hmm. the energy this way? But
we've been down that road. To me, it seems again, like more to your point is like the Norn stuff could have been such a treasure trove, like genuine character building for Rudeus and for Norn too. And it was so, like, you know, in and out over, where, again, like you said, there's all the stuff they spent time elsewhere dragging through this season where, like, how could that have not been trimmed? And then maybe, like, actually just, it could have been still solved in that room in that moment. But, like why could there be no conversation? And, like, they even say, like, you know, Rui's just like, I don't know what happened, but, like, she figured it out. I can tell just, you know, and it's just like, yeah, I bet, dude. Like, you didn't have to put any fucking work in. Like, you yeah. just sat there, and she somehow figured it out. Like, Reager did all the fucking work for you, dude. I don't know. Just, like, you know what I mean?
This
like,
did touch a nerve, didn't it?
Yeah. I don't know. I found it so incredibly stupid. Like,
yeah. No, I just felt
all
like
this time. Yeah.
It
yeah.
wasn't time well spent, like you said.
Yeah.
All right. Anyways.
I'm all fired up. My blood pressure's rising. All right,
let's fucking go, dude. So I know you're done, but I'll just briefly mention that I'm still absolutely in love with Shogun. Yeah. I'm on episode 8, so we have 2 left. I'm doing fairly well avoiding spoilers so far.
I will say Shogun as a across, because I was late to getting back to it too, but as a whole, I've seen next to no spoilers online. Like people yeah. have been like very respective of like that show.
I just watched Himatsuru, Tornaga's like buddy, commit seppuku. Yeah.
Unreal.
He's
like, fucking do it.
Yeah, in front of everybody, and Tornaga's yeah. been potentially feigning illness this whole time as well, and I think we're about to make a pretty major play. And I know that Mariko is involved with this play.
Yeah.
Somehow John Blackthorne was reunited with his at least one of his buddies from his crew.
Oh, and the crewmates, yeah.
That was a bit eye-opening of a letdown for him. Yeah, that yeah. was tough. But yeah, I don't know. I am so stoked that the show got made, exists, and seems to be like so well made that I don't know if we talked about this last time, but the guy who plays Tornaga-sama, who's been a samurai in every, yeah. you know, I want to say 90% of the roles that he's played.
Sure.
Including a brief cameo in the MCU. He EP'd this as well, right? He's executive yeah. producer on this show. And I think, like, maybe that has a lot to do with, like, how authentic it feels. But I fucking love this show.
So good.
Do you have anything else?
I do, actually.
Go ahead.
I think you might. So, I'm always pushing things on you. I'm always saying, Dave, check this out. Dave, check that out. I know you're. I know this was kind of a big deal, but that Everybody's in LA thing was last weekend.
Oh yeah, dude.
I watched the first episode. I didn't catch it live. I watched it after the fact. I did catch up on it. But again, out of solidarity for you and your love of comedy, I did watch it and I very thoroughly enjoyed it. I will be watching the rest of it. I love Richard Kind. That was a nice surprise seeing him on there as like kind of. Like,
oh man, the surprise guests are bananas.
Yeah, and like, you know, between like Stavro. If there's one thing I walked away with, like, I kind of don't like Jerry Seinfeld.
Yo, at all. Same.
He is such an asshole.
He's such a little shit.
Yeah, he's such a grumpy old man. Like, just the do you listen to David? Do you listen to the CBC at all? But you know, like Q with Tom Powers there. He does like a lot of good interviews. And Seinfeld was on that, and I've been seeing a lot of clips, and I'm just like, don't talk to Tom Power like that, dude. Like, fuck you. Like, you're such a, I don't know. He's been in the media a lot, and I'm just like, could you shut up? Like,
yeah, because he's promoting that Unfrosted movie, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, Seinfeld diehard fans will say he's not cranky, he's cantankerous, and it's funny because it's like. At that point, we're splitting hairs. I did see one good thing that I think really was a good kind of summation of it, is like the ironic part of Seinfeld and Larry David is that like Larry David plays this insufferable, cranky old guy, but like he appears to be so fucking funny and charming in all of his interviews, and it's kind of backwards for Seinfeld, is he plays this really fun, charming, witty dude on his show.
Yeah.
And in all of his interviews, he just seems like such a fucking prick. Yeah. Like, very much like, what can you do for me? Why am I here? Like, I just watched, and I firmly believe this is like my favorite award of all time, is the Mark Twain Prize for comedy.
Great speeches.
And he, Kevin Hart just got it. And I also love, you know, this is, you know, Everybody's in L.A., Netflix is a joke comedy festival. Obviously, all the stand-up specials that they're doing, like how hard they're leaning into comedy, I think is like extremely powerful for the culture and the time we're living in, and I applaud them for it. I know they're, you know, multi-billion-dollar company and like the streaming wars and all that, and I'm sure there's plenty bad about them that we could talk about, but I do love that they've leaned so hard into comedy.
Of course.
So with that in mind, where am I going? Oh, right, they put the Kevin Hart winning the prize, like they did it as a special, and it hit Netflix this weekend, and Seinfeld opens up for him, and of course, like, the lineup for Kevin Hart's people speaking was Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Dave Chappelle, Jimmy Fallon, Chelsea Handler, Tiffany Haddish, major Little Dicky. Major names, but of course Seinfeld's like first joke is like, this is what doing a favor for someone looks like. He's like, what do I get out of this? What can Kevin Hart do for me? Of course nothing, I'm Seinfeld. It's like, fuck you, man. Like, I get that it was funny in the moment considering the venue and that, but it was like, even here you can't fucking let go how big you are. Like, even here, but you have to like wave your dick
again
around.
Like one of the first things he says, like when he's on the couch, and I also love that like they put him beside like just like a regular guy.
Yeah,
and you could tell like kind of like the charm is just like not there, because you're not amongst more. There's not like an additional comedy buddy. Yeah. You're just like kind of eating up your. What's that fucking saying you always say? Yuck your yum or whatever.
Yeah, he's yucking.
No one's eating it up. Like, it's just some guy, and he was just there to like advocate for like, you know, coyotes, which I thought was hilarious.
I love that.
But, like, you know, he makes the joke of, like, why am I here? And it was like, oh, okay. Like, I get it. Like, you're, you know, you're being funny. But, like, the fact that he did the same joke for Kevin Hart and all that, it's essentially the same. It's just like, come on, dude.
He did yuck the yum of that show a little bit. Like, did you notice in Mulaney's, like, goodnight address, he wasn't even on the couch anymore? Like, he just left? Like, he was the only guest. He was the only guest to leave before the show closed. I don't know.
You know what? I will say, I think I had to go, because I watched like 20 minutes of it this morning before I left for work, and right as St. Vincent was starting playing. So there is more after she plays. Or he says like a goodbye. So I probably have a couple minutes I missed.
Yeah.
But Stavros being on the couch and just watching like him being in the couch and like in relation to like Jerry Seinfeld.
Love that.
And like just such a totally different, like tonally different and generation, you know, spanning.
Seinfeld's 70, man.
Yeah, I did find that surprising. Is it good for you, dude? Like, he does look good. All that money. I'm sure he probably has a blood boy somewhere.
He's got a little bit of work done, but he's towing the line relatively well, I will say.
Yeah. But I don't know. So anyway, thank you for the recommendation. I checked it out, and I'll definitely be watching the rest of that.
Well, while we're here, did you touch the roast of Tom Brady at all?
No, I can't. That's too much. I don't like roast.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah. I was about to say, dude, because, you know, more on Netflix being like, you know, the big comedy ally right now. I'm sure they learned a couple lessons in streaming that thing live. But even for me, sure. There were a couple jokes in there. I was like, whew.
Yeah.
I don't know about that, but... but it was also great to see, like, Tom Brady, as a guy who's not a football fan, Tom Brady is one of these, yeah, but he is one of these legacy media figures that is, like, truly larger than life, right? Like, we've heard Tarantino say before, like, movie stars don't really exist anymore. And, like, there is this weird changing of the guard happening, right? Where, like, on Everybody's in LA, like, the Stavros-Seinfeld comparison is a really good one, right? Because, like, comedy lovers fucking love Stavros.
Yeah.
Regular people will never have heard of this man or seen him. And when you see him, he's weird looking, right?
Yeah.
But everybody's heard of Seinfeld. So, like, there aren't many figures like that that are in their prime right now that exist. Brady's, like, one of those guys. Like, he's exiting his prime, I think. But... It was cool of him to do this, but it was more importantly for me, it was cool to see comics that were not that big go up and, like, just annihilate a crowd that big. Mm. They did it at the LA Forum, sold out 18,000 people capacity, which they haven't done for a roast before. And Netflix is the first time they live stream a roast. And if you compare their numbers to, like, I don't know, Comedy Central, who had the rights to the roast before... Okay. Like, this must have been seen by, I'm not exaggerating, what, 10x, 100x more people? Like, wow. This was a global phenomenon.
The roast always felt niche. It always felt like, you know.
And it was never live.
Yeah.
So to watch, like, Nikki Glaser and Tony Hinchcliffe and Andrew Schultz go up and all three of them get standing ovations was pretty cool.
Wow.
They decimated. And it also was good to see some people kind of bomb a little bit.
Who bombed?
Oh, man. Tom and Bert ate dick.
Oh, yeah?
They had a joint thing. And they've been saying, like, oh, well, it wasn't really up to us what we got to do. Netflix. Like, because traditionally, like, you know, you just go up, you roast the dais, you sit back down. I think maybe they... I'm sure
they normally fling at each other, too, right? Like, it's not always... It's not just always on one person.
Yeah,
it's not like the roastee is not the only person.
Exactly. You roast everybody on stage. But I guess Netflix wanted to change up the format as, like, a little breath of fresh air. And I believe this, for what it's worth. But they just said, hey, we'd like you to do, like, a joint roast where, like, you have, like, a PowerPoint almost. And you, like, roast Tom in this certain way. And it's like... They're effectively comparing how charming... Tom Brady, like, how beautiful he is and how, you know, poster boyish he is to similar historical figures that ended up being, like, cult leaders and dictators. And, like, the idea was good. It was just they're reading so direct off the prompter and it sounded so horrifically rehearsed and they were stumbling over their words and it was bad. It was very, very bad.
Damn.
Compared to, you know... how everybody else did. Ben Affleck was a surprise guest. He ate it bad.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he ate it bad. And a couple Patriots. And, you know, they're football players. I mean, I think, like, the biggest surprise is that, like, there are actually a couple football players that, like, fucking killed. Like, that did really, really
well. Oh, yeah, dude. Well, I think that's also, like, the audience. I think they know probably the stuff, like, they joke about. Like, it's... A big part of the audience is, you know, can kind of in line with that, right? Like, again, I didn't see what they said, but I don't know. Like, football players are, like, you know, I find a lot of the time with, like, athletes too, like, they're kind of a little more like us than other celebrities.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, like, a lot of time you put a camera in front of them, they don't know what to say. But every now and then you get one a little more charismatic, but they're still, in essence, like, kind of like, you know, like a regular person or whatever. So I can see that.
It's so funny you say that, because Tom Segura had a really great point, because one of the things that made headlines from the roast was Netflix editing out the booze of Kim Kardashian taking stage.
That's been making the rounds today. I haven't seen that
one. Yeah, okay. So I watched it live, and even a couple days later, I watched it rewatched it with Sam, and the boos were still in. I haven't gone to see if they have in fact edited them out, but she got booed for at least 30 straight seconds when she got on stage. And then Segura's point was like, you know, one thing I think that they didn't anticipate that, but one thing you could tell when you got in the room was like this was the biggest venue they'd ever done for a roast, and it was open to the public. He's like, the vibe of that quote room slash arena, you know, that many thousands of people. Yeah. He's like, it was like a fucking football game or a tailgate party. It's like, these people were here to see the athletes, to see Tom Brady, and then to laugh at some funny jokes. He's like,
sure.
That's the furthest thing from a Kim Kardashian fan, right? Like, if this was a Comedy Central roast where it's in a closed hall of just Hollywood people, then it probably would have went fine.
Sure.
But, he was just going on to say, like, it's the completely wrong demographic for people that would be stoked to see Kim Kardashian. she got booed pretty hard. It was pretty resounding. But, you know, she kept it moving. She recovered relatively well.
Yeah, say what you want. She is a professional, right? Like, she's...
Yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah. It's also interesting, I think... I swear I'll be done after this. Because all these comics are not massive A-listers, and many of them have existing relationships with Netflix for things like stand-up specials...
Sure.
Like, these people either didn't have to sign an NDA or just simply don't give a fuck about it, because every comic on that stage is saying everything about the behind the scenes stuff that went on.
Really, eh?
Every single one of them are very open about, oh yeah, like, there's rehearsal, we're all reading off the prompter. You can see where people get into trouble because they would try to riff and then return to the prompter script, and that's when they would fail. He's like, Ben Affleck, for example, would like start on prompt and then try to riff when he got a laugh, and then it would ruin his momentum. Then he'd try to return to the prompter, and it's like, it was just interesting to hear like all this behind the scenes stuff.
That's very interesting.
Yeah. But Kevin Hart also hosted that, by the way, and he annihilated. He was a fantastic host.
I don't think I've ever heard Kevin Hart tell a joke before. I only know him as an actor.
That's interesting. Yeah. He's been around so long, and I was actually saying this to Sam last night, where there are really big comics right now, you know, like I think because stand-up has changed so much in the last decade, where you can kind of watch comics go from, like, you know, club comics in New York, and then they become club comics touring domestically, and then maybe internationally, and then eventually like small theater comics doing like 2,000 seaters. Right. And then, like, if you make it to that next level, you start doing, you know, theaters everywhere. And then maybe, you know, this is reserved for maybe a dozen comics, but like fucking arenas and stadiums. Right.
Sure.
And guys like Gillis and Louis C.K. and Dave Chappelle, like, they've all been pretty out there about being like, you do lose something when you become like a concert. Like, when you start playing 8 to 10 to 16,000 seat venues, he's like, it's not intimate anymore. He's like, you got to be more, they all say you got to be more animated, you got to be bigger, you got to be, exaggerate your movements, because you got to remember that, you know, 70% of the audience is watching you on the Jumbotron, right? Yeah. And so, like, they're just talking about how that changes your style of comedy, and how they all often prefer slightly smaller venues that are a little bit more intimate. My point on this was that, honestly, Kevin Hart is absolutely built to be an arena act. And I have a couple specials, if you're interested, I can recommend. He is legit, but he is better as, like, he's kind of like a fucking concert. Like, he's so animated and energetic.
I can imagine. Yeah.
He actually reminds me a little bit of Dane Cook in his prime.
Oh, shit.
Like, okay. He's just...
Yeah, I can literally picture that special.
Big time storyteller, lots of voices, lots of desperation. You know what I mean? Like, there's wordplay for sure, but... Yeah, when you see him, like, in his element, it's like, yeah, okay, I understand why this guy became a movie star, because he is the fucking show.
Damn, man.
Yeah. All right. Sorry, I just talked a lot about comedy.
I brought it up, so.
Yeah. I think that's all I got, dog.
Yeah, that's all I got. Awesome. And I am falling behind on a couple other shows, but I am still keeping up with Astronaut. Loving it still.
Nice. I wrapped up that Parasite the Grey. I put a little review on the TikTok, on the Instagram at Part-Time Otaku Podcast. You can catch my thoughts there. But for you, Grant, I still recommend it. Get around to it.
I will. Yeah, it's on the list.
No rush. It's only 6 episodes. Knowing you, you could kill that in a weekend. It'll be there for you, right? Little South Korean thriller, horror, action suspense flick, sci-fi elements. They change just enough from the anime for it to be a total reimagining. It tonally is like completely different. I think like the big thing is like the people who made this, like compared to other adaptations that we've talked about in the past, it's just like this was in really, really good hands.
Fuck yeah, dude.
So yeah, that's a hard recommendation for me.
Right
on. Okay, we'll be back in a couple weeks. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, and also on social media, Instagram, TikTok, all of the necessary social media platforms. Pick your poison. We're out there. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time. Grant, go ahead, say the thing.
Bye, guys.
Cheers.